Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back. Chuck is coming to you live on 106.7 The Fan and NBC Sports Washington. As always, brought to you over by our friends at Crop Metcalf. They are the official heating and cooling company of the Junkies. You looking to be their next five-star HVAC technician or plumber? Visit CropMetcalf.com to join their team. I'm John Paul Flame, joined by Eric Pickle, Johnny Cake Sawville, and Jason Bishop.
Yeah.
So I mentioned Monday Night Football. It looks like ESPN has decided to move on from Joe Tessitore and Booger McFarland in the booth. They'll both remain employed by ESPN. They'll contribute to like the NFL live shows and other projects, but they're not going to be in the booth for Monday Night Football. And the odds, I guess, have come out as to who the favorites are to replace the duo. All and right. I'm kind of surprised. Brian Griese is the number one guy. Now, I think he's very good when I've heard him. Is he currently on ESPN? Does he do college football games? What does he do right now?
Pretty sure he does college football.
Greasy does college football.
Yeah. I was surprised to see him as the odds-on favorite over Orlovsky and Lewis Riddick and Hasselbeck all coming in at 5-1. So I guess there's buzz building around those names as well.
What about Pat McAfee?
He's at 9-1 here.
He's pretty funny.
On this list. Seems like, said, a big assignment to give him. Like maybe he will. I mean, they've been willing to, you know, go the wild card route before. I mean, I know it's a long time ago, but they hired Dennis Miller. They hired Tony Kornheiser. So they're not averse to that sort of thing.
McAfee said that he wants the gig, and he's talked to the execs about it, and his feeling is they're just not interested in him for whatever reason.
Really? Why? Because he's kind of – well, I don't think he's even too over the top, although he did – there was a he did some work with Game Day, College Game Day on ESPN, and they were I can't remember where they were doing the show, Valdez or
it was in Baylor when he jumped into the pond.
He jumped into the pond. It was the Baylor game, correct? And there's I don't think anybody knew he was going to do it. He just jumped off the stage
right
into the pond, did a belly flop right into the pond, and the pond was probably it was only like 3 or 4 feet deep. I mean. Kind of was dangerous.
Was he fleeing from ATF agents? I mean, what no. was he doing? What's going on there?
No, but David Pollack, he just couldn't stop laughing.
I think he's low after the failed experiment of, like, Booger McFarland. I bet you they just want to go to, like, a serious analyst.
Like a big name? Big name serious
someone
analyst?
Someone who knows their stuff, like, in and out.
What
like
about Kurt Warner?
Like Warner would probably be the choice if he wanted to do it.
Yeah.
But the problem with Warner, from what I read, is they're trying to hire somebody from within. And Kurt Warner's under contract with NFL Network.
Yeah, but in this day and age, are we really watching Monday Night Football for the people in the booth?
I mean, I'm not.
That was like a thing. That was like a thing 20 years ago.
I don't care. You could pluck two no names.
I only watch half the game anyway.
Cakes and Bish could be doing the call. It wouldn't bother me.
I'd love it.
I love that paycheck.
Every Monday night, people just mocked that crew.
Yeah, but I didn't understand why people – it was such a big deal to them.
Because they just suck. They were boring. I mean
– well, who cares? You're watching the game. You're not really paying that much attention to what
like
Booger's saying.
You like to have a little personality. And Booger was fine, although people started to really mock him week after week. And Tessitore just – I'm sorry, he doesn't have the charisma of a big-time play. Like, that's a big-time job.
Who was in the booth before when they had Booger on the sidelines in that wacky Booger-mobile? I already have forgotten – It was Tessitore with somebody else. Oh, it was Jason Witten. He was terrible.
Yeah. I mean, he's back. He's with the Raiders now. He's going to play forever, that guy.
And by the way, Jason Witten, I think, had hair when he was doing it, and now he's back to being a bald.
Oh, he had such a hairpiece. He had such a wig for that gig. That was his gig wig.
Yeah, I thought,
maybe the ratings
was an upgrade on Witten.
But the ratings probably slipped. It's probably the main reason why they had to make the change. I would
but
assume it's always ratings.
The ratings, it just depends on the games. I don't think all of a sudden people go, you know what, this is a great game, but I'm not going to watch it because Booger McFarland on the call.
Maybe. Obviously, Romo would have been the choice, but he chose to resign, make $1 billion. So let's see. I got.
Is Romo making like $17.5 million? I mean, it's insane.
So Peyton Manning just doesn't want to do it.
Well, what I read about Peyton was he doesn't want to commit long term. Like, I think he wants at least another year of spending time with his family.
Right.
He's still got other gigs, and he did like that NFL 100 thing. Mm-hmm. But he didn't want to commit to like signing some sort of 7-year deal where he's going to be a sportscaster, and he still is kind of toying with getting back into football, kind of like Elway.
He's so coveted, he could probably go to the network and say, "I'll work on a year-to-year deal. Give me a 1-year deal," and they would pay him a boatload of money. And if he wanted to do it the next year, he could just call his own shot. I mean, that's how desperate they would be to feature him. I would guess.
I think Philip Rivers might be pretty good once he finally retires.
Why?
I don't know. I just think he's got a pretty good personality.
He's like kind of a country boy to me.
Yeah, but he's kind of goofy.
He's a talker.
Yeah. He's got that southern twang. I think he's probably got a good personality. It's just my guess.
I like the dark horse in the list. So if you go down the odds, you could go 100-1 Antonio Brown in the booth.
Yeah. If you really want to burn your money,
Colin Kaepernick is 50-1.
That's exactly what it is, burning the money.
Yeah.
Eli Manning 40-1. I could see Eli getting into
it. Can somebody tell me who Bill Barnwell is at 20-1? who is Bill Barnwell? Can anybody tell me who that person is?
He's a writer.
Because that name jumps out at me because I've never seen it before.
See. Sports writer, staff writer for ESPN.com.
Okay. Why is he on the list?
Maybe he should put himself on the list.
He should be 200,000-1. That you're going to hire Bill Barnwell.
You know what else I noticed about like all these games is that every single person calling them is against your team. Everyone thinks that. I don't understand
Right. They'd be like, Pat McAfee hates the Washington Redskins.
Yeah,
or hates
exactly.
The Dallas Cowboys. If the Ravens were featured, he would hate the Baltimore Ravens. He'd hate Lamar Jackson so much. Yeah.
Collinsworth hates Lamar Jackson.
Right. Who catches the most heat for that? It's Troy Aikman, right? Redskins fans are convinced Troy Aikman has something against the Redskins when he calls games, when the fact of the matter is the Redskins have had losing seasons more often than not.
Yeah.
Right. And they've been a bad team.
Right. Hey, you have the odds in front of you?
Yes.
What are the odds on this guy getting the gig?
Hello, basketball fans. Welcome to the Civic Center here in Salisbury, Maryland. My name is Bish, sports director at WSUR, along with Greg Jewell doing color commentation tonight. Where the Salisbury State
color
Seagulls will take on the UMES Fighting Hawks in a rematch of last year's battle of the Eastern Shore.
The War of the Shore!
That was 1992, and it was at the, I don't know what they call it now, but it was like at this arena right there in Salisbury.
Salisbury and Civic Center!
Did you have a go-to, signature call?
It was Salisbury and UMES, and I believe Salisbury beat UMES.
Did you have the signature call? You know how like Marv Albert on a jumper would go, yes! Did you have something like that?
I mean, I can't remember. It was so long ago. Couldn't even remember what the name of the arena was. But I do remember it was fun. I did like doing it.
And you would you do it, if you could do it today, would you? Like, obviously, you're not a professional.
No.
But I mean, would you have interest in doing it?
No.
Like, now that you've, this is the... I can literally say this is what I've always wanted to do. I've listened to this kind of radio, and I've always wanted to do this. I didn't want to be a play-by-play guy. I didn't want to, be host of Today Show. Or anything. I wanted to be a radio guy.
No, I couldn't do it now. I just remember the radio where the sports director asked me if I wanted to do it, and I said, sure, no big deal. Because I knew about three people listened to it.
You knew the no pressure.
Was that also?
It wasn't actually on the radio.
It was televised, right?
Yeah, you had to.
On cable?
On simulcast or whatever they. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right on cable. It's like channel 5. And then that's the only way. Jeff Bernstein was the only guy who would listen to it.
Would you call all the games? So did you do like 25 games?
No, we did all the football games. But we didn't do all the – no, that, we only did that basketball game because it was a big one because they were playing UMBS.
That's a big one.
Did you have any Salisbury – did you have any groupies that loved the fact that you were calling the games?
Of course. Of course, Richie. But we did do all the football games.
But hold on. I got one more.
Tiger is on the 10th tee box. There are a million donks following him. And it's got to be 137 degrees out here. Tiger trying to win this tournament for the second time. He's got a 6-iron in his hand.
Where was
They've this? Moved the tee boxes up one from yesterday, so it's probably playing in the 210 range.
What's the wind like?
There's absolutely no wind out here, JP.
How do you know he has a 6-iron?
I don't.
Hey, Jason.
Roll with the punches.
Was that at the...
You got to finish that. I there was more to it. Page.
Tiger is...
Think you
takes
did.
A couple practice swings. He looks a little worn out.
Is he
probably wearing... from last night's threesome from the backpage.com.
Is he wearing the traditional Friday blue?
I cannot tell what he's wearing. He's wearing black pants and maybe a gray shirt. He hits this ball extremely high. It's coming in on a great trajectory.
You can't see it.
And it just over the pin into the first cut. He's got about 8 feet, maybe 10 feet for birdie.
Kind of nubby.
Where was that? Was that like number 10?
Yeah.
You could be the next Jim Nance.
I don't remember.
I think that was fantastic.
I think
that
was pretty good.
Was that like 7 or 8 years ago?
Very long.
Yeah, I think so.
I like Cakes.
Maybe not 7 or 8.
Nubby. Kind of nubby.
You would
maybe
die
not
for
seven.
That shot.
Right.
Of course I would.
8 feet away, Cakes. He's just
8 feet
the first
away,
cut.
Birdie shot Cakes like kind of nubby. Yeah. What are you, on a hole in one?
I don't know if I was talking about the shot or Jason's call of the shot. I could have been talking
so
about either.
That's what we were broadcasting from the tent behind the green, and you actually went outside with a wireless mic.
Correct.
And you viewed it from there.
I did,
and
yes.
Gave us
I did the
play-by-play.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Now
it was like Roger Maltby.
It's funny because I remember I took my camera out and got credentialed that week and shot Tiger. And it's funny when you look in hindsight, I have a bunch of shots of Tiger after he hit the ball, cringing. And this is before. This is probably a few months before he just shut it all down and it started to undergo multiple back surgeries.
Right. Right.
And it's weird because he has a pained expression in all these photos I took of him.
Yeah. He wasn't on the oxy that day.
He might not have been. In fact, didn't he withdraw?
That particular tournament?
Yeah.
He did. I can't remember if it was that tournament or not.
Yeah.
But that sounds about right, about 8 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Coming up next, Matt Norlin is going to join us. He's a senior writer for CBS Sports. We will talk about the NBA's latest proposal, The Last Dance, and more right here on The Junkies.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
All right, football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the Free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.
Welcome back. Junkies coming to you live on 106.7 The Fan and NBC Sports Washington. Joined now by Matt Norlander, senior writer for CBS Sports, who recently wrote about Michael Jordan. What's up, Matt?
Hey, good morning. How are we doing?
Thanks for joining us. An interesting point in your article that Jordan's one of these guys that can be the hero and the villain at the same time.
Yeah. You want me to lay that out for you?
Yeah.
There's no other player, current or past, and I don't or in the future that I think we'll be able to do this. Jordan had the ability where even if you hated him, you couldn't help but watch him. I live up in Connecticut, so obviously have a number of friends who are New York Knicks fans, and even they, while they, you know, couldn't stand to have to face the Bulls and Jordan, and hope beyond hope that they could somehow beat him and win, and that never happened when Jordan was on the team, they still can't help but love to watch him play. He is irresistible. And I thought that the past two episodes that aired on Sunday night kind of sneakily showed that once more where, you know, I wrote a column at CBSSports.com about this, and I kind of lead that column off about Jordan, where the Gary Payton reaction clip was probably the most entertaining clip we've seen, and probably will see. Maybe 9 or 10 will offer up something even better, but what was so telling to me about this is, you know, he's handed the tablet yet again to watch an interview that was held recently by one of the documentary subjects, in this case it's Payton, and he just lets out this, like, huge cackle belly laugh, and then, you know, his eyes kind of bug out when Peyton's saying, if I had guarded him the whole time, things would have been different. And it's almost like, you know, as all this is happening, right, the collective sports fan that's watching this is getting, you know, an absolute kick out of it, because they love Jordan clowning on people in this way, the way that he did on the court. But he's pulled a magnificent trick here, because if you go back and look, Michael Jordan's worst finals, without debate, by far, and almost ironically, were the 96 finals. That was the best Bulls team ever, but that was Jordan's worst final statistically easily. In fact, he averaged fewer than 24 points when Payton was guarding him during those games. So Gary Payton actually has a really good case that when he was guarding MJ, things changed and they were different. And that is true. But because of the influence and sway of Michael Jordan, even when he's acting like a cackling jerk, our instinct is not to believe Gary Payton. It's to say, yeah, this is it. Look how amazing this is. Jordan is just absolutely trashing this guy and disposing of him by laughing at him twice and then saying, I had no problem with the glove. And we are so swayed by it. There is not another athlete ever that has been as loved, and I won't even say hated, but just could bring in the sports fan no matter what you felt about him, and he came out winning every single time. There's just, it's not there. You can make it real quick. You can make the case that LeBron James has a massive fan base, and people push back on him, and there's, you know, all this completely, you know, ankle deep shallow BS that's brought up about him. But there's still plenty of people who genuinely just have an antagonism toward LeBron, and that's just never been the case with Jordan. Fair or not, that's just how it is.
Matt, with you being a Connecticut guy, does it hurt you in your soul that Scotty Burrell was a guy that Jordan just went in on relentlessly? Does it hurt you?
No. So my parents grew up in Chicago, and I grew up in Vermont. So I grew up a Bulls fan. First of all, I was a Walter Payton, Michael Jordan brainwashed from the age of three, thankfully, with all of this. And so then I moved to Connecticut the day before my senior year of high school out of Vermont. So I'm not a UConn fan. My wife actually is an alumnus of the university, but I have no particular connection to Scotty Burrell or UConn or anything like that. I actually thought it was pretty interesting. And actually I've had dinner with Scotty Burrell before, and didn't actually at the time when we did that, didn't even think to ask him about his days with the Bulls. But I think fortunately for Scott, he comes out looking even better than maybe we would have anticipated from the episodes earlier in the doc. And Jordan's just like, okay, you know, I was trying to ride this guy because I might need him. And he's just too nice, man. He's just way too nice of a guy. And that definitely wound up being true there. But it's been fascinating. It certainly has. Just this documentary has gotten a lot of praise, plenty of criticism for what it isn't. But I didn't expect it to be, you know, something on the level of the OJ documentary that came out a few years ago. I just didn't think it would be that. I've thoroughly enjoyed it, being someone who was just, you know, a huge, huge, huge Bulls fan growing up. It's been great to go back and see all this. I did one quick follow on that, though. Maybe episodes 9 and 10 will give us some more. I have felt that we haven't had quite enough true, like, behind the scenes, like, this is what was captured on camera in real time. Like, we've gotten some, but there hasn't been quite enough, like, cameras were with the team in 97, 98, and here's all the good stuff it captured. That just seems to me has fallen a little bit short of expectation.
I just think it's riveting television, Matt. I really do. I wasn't necessarily a Bulls fan. I was just a Jordan fan. So I guess I was a Bulls fan. I was always rooting for their teams. But once he left, I didn't care about him. But just the behind-the-scenes footage, just all the old footage of 90s basketball. Man, you just realize how much you miss it because those rivalries, you'll never have those rivalries again. It's not even close to what it is today. And just kind of the brand of basketball, right, and the personalities. What was your thought on the end of episode 8 when he starts talking about the cost of, you know, driving these guys to want to win like him and really pushing them? And he talked about the fight with Kerr. And then he starts to get emotional at the very end. What was your take on that?
Yeah, no, that was when he was talking about when he was getting emotional at the end of episode 7, they actually did a pretty sweet thing where they tied the end of episode 7 and 8. They were both emotional endings. The end of episode 8 was when we saw a video of him, again, crying on the floor after winning the 96 title. But that was surprising video in that, like, you actually heard him sobbing. Right. And while that video has been played over the years, the audio has never – maybe it's been played, but I noticed this amongst a lot of people. Like, no one can ever recall ever hearing it. But the stuff at the end of episode 7 really was cutting into, I think, why – it's just amazing the psyche of Jordan and how so many people identify with it at the same time being unable to – actually live that out. And that's probably for the better, by the way, because, you know, Jordan, again, he can pull off being the hero and the villain. You can easily see why he was not a good guy to be around in so many facets there. If you lived your life like Michael Jordan, you wouldn't have any friends. You know, you would have the respect as much as you would have the fear of maybe your contemporaries there. But because of that, there's just this interesting pull with, and maybe it's special to sports because you can do it in, you know, in the arena and in the field of competition. And when you do that, it brings people in more and they can kind of latch themselves on to your philosophies, if you will. Yeah. But the way that he was getting emotional and describing why he did what he did, who he was, how much he cared, I thought it was absolutely on the money when he said, "I never asked anything to my teammates that I didn't do it myself." I think that is so very true. And with all of that, I wish he wouldn't have said break. I wish that he had actually been able to, even if he was losing his composure a bit, gone on a little bit more. I actually wanted a little more from Jordan in kind of laying out how much it meant to him and kind of continuing there. So it was a great moment and a great spot to cut the end of the episode. There's no doubt about it. But I actually was like, no, if this is a behind the scenes, like, you're giving us this, don't say break, like, continue with this, like, keep fighting through it the way you would in the game, keep going. So it was an awesome moment, but I wanted a little more.
It's almost like when he reflects back on it, you know, as you get older and wiser, you start feeling differently about other relationships you had or fractured relationships. It's almost like he feels bad the way he treated those guys. Or am I looking in a different way?
In some ways, I think that is true. In other ways, not, because he looks at everything that's happened since that all finished. And in the end, for him, it was probably, no doubt about it, worth it. I think that's clear. But yes, there could be, you know, there's so much to interpret from what he was saying and what he could have been feeling as he was wrapping up that particular part of the interview at the end of episode 7 there. But it's been... The entire doc has just been an interesting, obviously, walk down memory lane. It's so funny that you mentioned that, like, you weren't a Bulls fan, you were a Jordan fan, mm-hmm. and then when he left, you know, that was kind of it. Well, you know, you speak for 40% of the NBA audience. You know, when Michael left the Bulls and retired again for a second time, interest in the league, I won't say plummeted, but the ratings, like, easily show, like, how much he carried the league was absurd. And even now, you know, this is a cultural event. When we get 2, 4, 8 years down the road, and we are clear of this, you know, just brutal pandemic situation, I think we will in some ways look back on, you remember those 5 weeks in April and May of 2020 when, you know, COVID-19 was, and we all gathered around our televisions talking as if it was like 1982 when people actually used to do that. They would gather around their television. But this has become, the defining sports event in a time when there are no other sports. Michael Jordan is yet again, like, carrying the NBA, carrying the interest of it, and it's been very fascinating to see. And I will say, and I feel this way now, and I'm going to feel it even more when we get to Sunday night. Amazingly enough, like 10 episodes is not enough. Like,
oh, you could have, yeah.
20 truthfully would have been too many, but you could have gotten 12 episodes. I mean, they have barely touched on, like, you could do a whole episode on the shoes, and we got like 7 minutes on Jordan's shoes. You know,
yeah.
You could do a whole episode on the Olympics in general, and that was dedicated to about 25 minutes of an episode. So there's just parts here and there where they didn't really dive into it, but it's been awesome nonetheless, and has really helped, I think, a younger generation understand more of what the NBA was about in the 80s and the 90s, and given more of an appreciation for truly how big Michael Jordan was, like, you know, one of the three or four most famous people on the planet at that point.
Yeah.
At this point, it's almost the same. I mean, he's easily in the top 10, and for him to be, and he's not on television. The fact that we're seeing him now, he almost never does interviews, and that's still the case there. It really is something.
Yeah, he was so media-friendly back then, but you never hear from him now. It's kind of strange.
Yeah, well, I mean, you don't need to. That's the thing. Is he sacrificed, and we saw this in episode 5, I think it was.
Four, yeah.
When he was on the couch and talking about how he couldn't, he was done with it. You know, he was available to the media as part of the gig, and then, you know, now he's a team owner, and you know, he's a billionaire, and he just doesn't need to be. So it's not surprising to me, but after having lived the life he lived in now, the fact that, you know, it's probably a little bit easier for him now than it would have been in 94, 98, 2005. But, you know, when you've been in the spotlight for so long and you become one of the most famous people in the history of the planet, then, yeah, it's completely understandable when you might want to just say, you know what, I'm going to try and live my life as best I can outside of the spotlight. Like, he's not a recluse. Like, he's a part owner of a team, and, you know, he's seen in the skybox here and there occasionally and stuff like that. But it is interesting nonetheless.
Just from a sports writer's perspective, when they talked about his retirement and they insinuate, a lot of sports writers insinuated, almost accused him of leaving because David Stern suspended him for 18 months because of the gambling. Right. And they put that out there. Can you imagine? Now, everything has changed in 25 years, but can you imagine doing that as a sports writer now? If, let's just say, LeBron, you know, retired or someone else retired and you just started accusing him of certain things. I mean, would your bosses even allow you to write that stuff without the evidence? I couldn't believe
it. No. And I mean, listen, I won't impugn the entire profession because that's clearly unfair, but you probably just had a few people here and there that did it. And the, legend of it grows larger than maybe it actually was there, but it goes to show where some people might lament on the state of sports writing today. Maybe not so much has changed in the past 25, 30 years there. And that's again to remind people that, you know, 80 to 90% of the people in the profession do it the right way, do it responsibly.
Sure.
But
sure.
Sometimes there can be elements to a story that because of one, the way that it might be presented or written about with one person, it gets amplified in such a way where it kind of goes crazy. But I'm glad that they addressed that stuff. And the whole thing makes zero sense. It always has to me. If you're David Stern and remember what David Stern's reputation was, and you have a global icon, you're really going to go to him and say, all right, Michael, here's the plan. All right. I'm going to suspend you. I'm going to suspend you for 18 months. That way, if you want, you can randomly come back in March of 1995.
It's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. I mean, those guys, all those writers should have been fired immediately for writing that.
Yeah, it was idiotic. But at the time, you know, Jordan had been this kind of Teflon guy. And then when you had all of the things connected to his gambling and with all of that, it was like, oh, what, you know, might we have a scandal here? And sometimes, yes, again, the beast almost feeds itself, but I don't disagree with you.
Hey, Matt, real quick, we're talking to Matt Norlander, senior writer for CBS Sports. Where do you see the Zion Williamson story going?
It's a good question. Because I don't know how valid this counter. Like, the only reason why Zion Williamson has come up like this is because of the counter suit. You know, I'm sure your listeners might have a general idea, but real quick, just to lay it out real quick. You know, Zion Williamson, once he left Duke, agreed to be represented by an agent with a marketing company. And then CAA, which is the biggest agency in America, was able to sway him and convince him to come along with us. And certainly he did that. And because of that, when you lose out on Zion Williamson, you're going to be really ticked off, and you're going to try and do everything you can to get what you thought was going to be yours. So because of all that, we have a countersuit with his former marketing manager. And it's all a matter of whether or not any of this stuff can be publicly known through deposition or through court. I would bet, given the value of Zion Williamson going forward, that if anything were to happen, it will be a settlement with non-disclosure agreements, and we will not find anything else more. It's important to know that the things that have been connected to this are not actually allegations. They are just simply salacious fact-finding questions. They could definitely be based in truth. I definitely think that's a possibility. Wouldn't surprise me at all. Remember when Zion committed to Duke, it was a shock. No one thought he was going there. It sounds crazy after the fact, but actually at the time when Zion Williamson committed to Duke, they were not the favorite. They were not the second favorite. They were not the third favorite there. And I also think that given how the machine works, if you will, guys, as much as people are dying for, like, oh, yeah, Coach K is dirty, it's time to get him, that just wasn't the case here. That's just not how it works. You have shoe companies who naturally grease the wheels for some of the biggest programs, and within that, you can have people that work with these shoe companies that are helping out the families, and then the coaches never, they're never involved when it gets to that point. So we'll wait and see. I mean, it's certainly, I know people are waiting for Duke to get its comeuppance with all of that, but I don't foresee this getting to a stage where we're talking 2 weeks, 6 weeks, 3 months from now, in like crazy detail, in Zion Williamson or, you know, Mike Krzyzewski's like being called to speak on the record about what he did or didn't know. I just don't think we're going to get that far with it.
Okay.
Matt, appreciate the insight.
Good stuff.
That's Matt Norlander, senior writer for CBS Sports and CBSSports.com. Thanks, pal.
Thank you, Matt.
Thanks, fellas. Have a great day.
Yep. You
Good
too.
Stuff,
thank
man.
You, buddy.
Coming up next, will it be soon that Cakes may actually be seeing some flops at MGM?
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back. Chucky's coming to you live on 106.7 The Fan and NBC Sports Washington. I just want to throw this out there. To all the tweeters who get in a Twitter war with EB, don't loop me in. I don't care. I don't feel like litigating what you are arguing with EB about. I don't know why I get tossed in there.
You're getting roped in?
I got roped into some, I don't know, Eric's having some back and forth with some guy, and some guy just all of a sudden ats me.
It's not just one guy. It's quite a few people. I'm just.
I know, but I don't need to litigate whatever fight you have.
I don't have a fight. I'm just dropping bombs on them.
About what?
I'm just giving them stats.
Well, one side. There's stats on the
COVID
other
stuff.
Side, too.
It's
stats
COVID
don't
debates.
Matter. Well, they could cite their stats. I'll cite mine. They can't only cite theirs. I'll cite mine, and then you'd be the judge. I don't know. Tell me.
You be.
I don't
the
have
judge.
Any interest in litigating it. That's what I just want to tell the tweeters out there. Don't at me. If you want to litigate it with Eric, you can.
I told a guy, bring your best shot. Bring your best shot.
Because you know what? People are going to believe what they want to believe.
Why do you even waste your time with that?
Because I actually don't consider it a waste of time.
So you like to debate people over COVID statistics?
Well, because if people say things like, you're misinforming the public.
Oh, okay.
And then they cite something from some outrageous source on another side. They'll trash my source, and then they'll cite an outrageous source on the other side. You can't have it both ways.
But you understand your opinion, you're not.
But see, this is the problem. This is why we decided to drop politics years ago. Is that the problem is you call it an outrageous source, and it may not be an outrageous source in somebody else's
eyes.
By
all accounts, they are. It's they're very simple. My sources are right side sources. Their sources are left side sources. Right. By all accounts, no one in the world thinks the Daily Beast is in the middle. Zero.
But
nobody.
See, but
nobody.
With that guy in particular, you're never going to convince him.
No. Correct. And
everybody's in the trench.
It's just a waste of time.
Correct.
But I will say this, that when it comes to Sweden, I don't think we should just say Sweden is so great and they did something totally different because, look, I don't know all the ins and outs of it, but the fact of the matter is they weren't that far different. Their restaurants were open and some things were, but they shut down their schools. They shut down a lot of things over in Sweden. And if you look at their per capita deaths, it's actually gone higher than some of their neighbors.
Okay, but if you look at their average, because I've got the stats right here from Worldometers, okay? Do you understand that I just did Sweden because this guy wanted to go back and forth with me. Do you understand that 98% of the cases just in Sweden are considered mild? 98%.
Right.
Okay. I just did the math because I couldn't find it on the total number of victims. So I did my own math when I added up all the different age ranges. 88% of the victims in Sweden are over 70. Now, that doesn't mean that their life is less valuable. It just hammers home the point that this virus is targeting the elderly. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying it's not a dangerous virus. I'm not saying it's not lethal. I'm saying it's super contagious for all of us, but it's lethal for specific groups. People are hearing what they want to hear, and I don't care, but I will fight you on it. And I'll show you data to prove it.
All I
know
is.
And then you can show me a 30-year-old that died from it that had no symptoms. And all I can tell you is it's a horrific outlier.
At Money Metal Cakes on Twitter is a COVID-free zone.
Right. Zero. Right. Have this whole.
That's why you and I are different.
You don't have to write something to EB Junkies. Write whatever the hell you're writing. And then just at the end, slide in at Glass Joe JP. Unnecessary. Just keep it to EB.
Right. Exactly. Because you don't want to see it.
I mean, because
you don't
want to argue
see
both
it.
Sides.
I mean,
you can find
on.
Data, and
of course.
What I'm saying is, you
that's
know,
my point.
If we're gonna,
it's like arguing
everything.
Who's greater, LeBron
right, so
or
then,
Michael. I mean, it's,
so you can bring up, you
don't
can bring
say
up facts.
That, don't say that my side is invalid and your side is valid. I'm giving you my opinion. You take it for what it's worth. You should have your own opinion. If you take a radio guy's opinion, you're a moron. You're a moron. If you
well,
take a radio
also
guy's
is,
opinion,
there is a. Factor of just getting a rise out of you because they know you're going to go off on it and you're going to go on a rant and you're going to act all crazy and your blood's going to start
Jimmy
spilling from your ears.
I thought we were going to talk about flops here. What
Jimmy brought it up.
I mean, what's happening? What's
it
happening
up?
Here?
I wanted to bring that up before we got
I
into
just
the
want
flops.
To talk about the flops.
Well, Kate, you can talk about it. You're the MGM poker ambo. Yeah. Do you have the breakdown of what MGM's planning to do?
How would I have the breakdown?
Well, there's articles. I sent the article yesterday.
I don't have a breakdown.
I sent it to you.
I can
do you ever check your email?
Yeah, but I can call Johnny Grooms if I need a breakdown.
That's why I'm kicking it to you. Maybe you've got even more.
No,
more
I don't have. I don't have any sort of inside skinny as
they
to when
a
I'm going to be seeing
props. They have a 7-point safety plan.
Okay, case. That's fine. Yes. Whatever. That's policy. What tilted me is that I saw, I think the Wynn and maybe the Encore are planning on like reopening in Vegas, but the poker room is not reopening, at least not during the initial phase of reopening. And the bars are not reopening. Certain parts of the casino will be reopened. But the poker room and the bars are not reopening initially. That tilts me a little bit.
Here's
and
seven
you're going to have physical distancing at slot machines. Not that it matters.
Well, I already do that. I don't go anywhere near them.
Where are the
they're
plexiglass?
They're going to have hand washing stations on the casino floor.
Okay,
good.
That's not a big deal. Who cares
about
that? Where are they going to have the plexiglass barriers? Is that going to be at the blackjack tables in
between
the seats?
I don't know. Not sure.
Or is that going to be in between the slot machines? Where is that going to be?
I think it's going to be at card tables.
Okay, so that'll be at the blackjack tables.
We've seen prototypes. I don't know whether that's actually going to go into effect or not. I don't know at this point.
Oh, so fewer players at card tables. All right, so they might I wonder if they'll limit, so if you sit down at a blackjack table, usually have six seats, I wonder if they'll limit it to three.
Might be like three people. Who knows?
Ah.
Oh, I'm going to be playing some shorthanded poker. That means my suited king that I wouldn't play normally.
Yeah, but
four or five hands,
this is
up
Vegas.
In value.
This is Vegas. This is not National Harbor.
I know. I understand.
The rules could be totally different.
They could be. We'll have to wait and see. We're in a holding pattern, JP.
Well, that's just obviously Vegas is desperate. They need to.
I know you're ready to go, though, Cakes. So ready to go. And I need to go to my box and get my chips. Because I have a substantial amount of chips at MGM National Harbor.
Did you ever pull any of those chips out?
No. They're still there. It's like 14 large.
Do you know if MGM National Harbor closed their doors? Because remember we had the donk who said that in Vegas they didn't even have locks.
Hey, I don't know. I don't know if there are locks in the doors or not. I just want to get back in at some point.
So we got to get out of here. For Bish, Cakes, EB, I'm JP. We're the Junkies. Grant and Danny, they're coming up next. Keep it here on The Fan.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.